We'd like to welcome you to the virtual kitchen table. We are Haley from Taking a Kinder Path, Ashley from Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves, and myself, Erin, from Everlearning. We're gathering to have conversations about family life and home education, most specifically unschooling, which is sometimes known as self-directed education, or as I often refer to it, whole life learning. We'll be sharing experiences and ideas, learning as we go. We hope you'll pull a chair up to the table and join us. Welcome back to the virtual kitchen table. It is Erin here with Ashley, and Haley's off for a little while longer, so we're still missing Haley today, but we have Anne from Oh By The By on Instagram, and you're going to have to correct me if I got that wrong. Is it Oh By The By?
I think so.
Okay.
I always forget if there's a dot in there, but I think it's just Oh By The By.
Well, when we put it in a link, we'll figure it out. And April from Modern Homeschoolers, and oh, April, I got this wrong last time. Heroine of your journey, heroine of your story. What is it?
Oh, there you go. You got it.
Which one?
Heroine of your story.
Heroine of your story.
But I'm the same. I'm like, because with the Instagram names, you kind of have to figure out how to do it right. Sometimes
yes.
It has the dots and sometimes it doesn't. And
you got it. So anyway, we will link those. And so we're talking today, and I think we're all pretty excited to talk about this topic. We're talking about science and essentially like unschooling science. How do we learn science naturally? And I think just to give a little disclaimer from the beginning, this is not to suggest that we're not suggesting that curriculum can't be helpful sometimes, or, you know, a specific trip to the science museum or something like that can't be helpful. I think those things all come into play when they make sense for people. But we were really interested in just exploring and kind of like digging in a little bit to how much science is actually around us all the time. And what do we notice our kids picking up on? And then what do we even notice ourselves, like some of our own observations, and just kind of living in a curious way that we start to notice some of those connections and some of those things coming up. So I think I was particularly, originally I was very inspired, Anne, by a lot of your posts about birding and migration, your camera with your bears, your neighborhood bears, and just kind of watching the different ways that it just seems like it kind of weaves in and out of your life without it being, you know, in quotation, science or a thing that you're doing. And April, you know, you were here with us for a recent episode, Spot the Learning. And I mean, I think I shared with you at that time how inspired I've been watching just the way that you're capturing just like kind of in real time learning and how much exploring your kids are doing and the way that, I don't know, just the way that you're framing that and noticing it. And I've been noticing lately, like so much of that is very scientific. I just saw a post from you recently about your daughter building a structure, and just the building and the construction and figuring out the weight. So I just feel like we might have a lot to talk about today. Yeah. Yeah, Ashley, you said you had a definition about science, kind of one definition of science that maybe that can get us started.
Yeah, sure. So I just quickly looked this up and it was a definition I found, I think specifically for kids. So I thought it would be a nice one for today. So I'll just read that. Science is a system of observations and experiments used to gain knowledge about how the universe works. Observations describe how and why things happen the way they do, and experiments are investigations used to explain how the world works. So when I was getting ready for today, like we often do, or I often do, is I take a moment and go, wait a second, let's look up the definition of this. And then I actually took it a little step further and really quickly looked up kind of like the subtopics of science. Like, are all the things I'm thinking of, do those actually all fit into science? Because they do start to, what's the word? Like fit in with other subjects too pretty easily. But yeah, I thought that was a decent definition to kind of get us started in what we're talking about today. So yeah, I don't know who wants to start first. I do have your questions pulled up, Erin. But I think the first question was, what do you think of when you think of science? So we could go off of adding, or Erin, I think you might have had a couple more words you wanted to add to the definition.
I mean, I think the words that I had been thinking about were just maybe along the lines of the question that you just mentioned, like, what do you think of when you think of science? And for me, a lot of it's just curiosity and exploring. I think a lot of it for my kids, the natural things that they've wanted to understand, a lot of it's about like how things work. So trying to figure out like what makes things do the things that they do. And so just really investigating things that way. And I think as I've gotten older, and I mean, some of this was just becoming an adult, but maybe even as I've become an older adult, just looking at how interconnected things are, that I think, you know, the way that I would have learned science growing up was very, you know, we would do a unit on space and the solar system, and then we would do a unit on, I don't even know, like pollination. And they were sort of all these different things. And just kind of realizing, I mean, not everything is connected, but a lot of things are very connected. And I think I had just posted something on Instagram yesterday. I think I've been really interested in noticing like progressions and small differences. So the example that I had used on Instagram yesterday was I'd been for a walk maybe about 3.5 weeks ago, and I'd noticed just these very cool little spherical mushrooms coming out of this kind of tall, skinny birch tree. And I had taken some pictures of them. And then I was walking through the path again, not even thinking about the tree. And I noticed these like broad, flat mushrooms. And I'm like, oh, those are cool. And then I'm like, oh, wait, that's the same tree. And so I looked back in my photos to see like, what's the length between when they were these little puffball and them flattening out. And so I just find myself interested in that kind of thing. And sometimes that's enough. Like sometimes I'm just like, oh, that's cool. That's, and then other times I do find myself coming home and researching and diving deeper into things. So I think what I was saying in my post was, you know, science is cool either way. Sometimes it's just a really cool observation, or sometimes it does give us a chance to dive into something. But for me, more and more, it's been like, how do things connect? What are the timelines of things? Not worrying so much about, I don't know, really, really clear specifics, but it's more been a pondering, I would say, recently for me. So yeah, I'm just kind of interested in how it's looking for me now that I don't even have young kids anymore, and just sort of what that process is. But yeah.
Erin, I really relate exactly to what you're talking about. I think it's so interesting how my idea of science has changed as I've become a homeschooling mom and as I've gotten older. But I think like it really just hit me recently. I feel like for the first, you know, 30, 40 years of my life, science was just a school subject. And to be honest, it was a school subject that I thought I had really not much interest in at all. As a kid, I mostly just remember, like, you know, the annual science fair at school that I wasn't that interested in. You know, it was okay, but I really don't remember any other science lesson. I was the kid in high school who did not want to dissect the worm, and, you know, kind of opted out of that class and took the writing assignment, and just sort of saw myself as, you know, this person who didn't like science. And I didn't have any problem with that, but it's just funny to me now how suddenly, as I'm, you know, working with my kids every day and I'm helping them to see the learning, and I'm creating these videos for Instagram to help other people see how my kids are learning science, I'm like, wow, science is actually everywhere. Like, we don't plan any science around here, and science seems to find us everywhere we go. And it's fun and it's exciting, and it just kind of blows my mind how, you know, that could just change so quickly for me. And really, it's just, you know, that change of perspective. But it really just it changes everything, and it changes how I experience the world and how we all do now, because of that little shift in perspective.
I think I was your opposite, April.
Right. Yeah.
I grew up absolutely loving silence. And yet at the same time, even though I was homeschooled, the way you're saying, it was still a topic. And I grew up in a family that was very sciencey, very nature-y, and yet it was still kind of a topic. Like, I enjoyed the topic and going to research topic things. And my little stints in school, I enjoyed the science classes. I was the one who wanted to do the dissection. I loved it. But then I found science at a different level when I became a mother. And so it had me thinking today, and I pulled back up, I think it was maybe back in 2020, there had been this Goalcast video with Neil deGrasse Tyson that had really, really resonated with me. And so I went back and tried to find it today, where he was talking about how scientists are kids who are, yeah, adult scientists are kids who never grew up. Because when kids start, you know, like when they're toddlers, that's what they're doing nonstop. It's, how does this work? Why does this happen? What happens if I do this? You know, it's like, it's constantly this scientific inquiry. And so he had talked about how what we need to do is value that inquisitive nature. And so I think I was just fortunate that because I loved science so much, I was like, science to me is something to be indulged. And so we indulged it all the time. And then that grew my appreciation of it. Where now, like Erin, as you were saying, how it's something very organic here, where it's more of like just how we live. It's part of how we live all the time. And it just weaves itself in and out. And I'm forever more appreciative of the way it's just everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking about that a lot today too, and how science is very much like, it just naturally comes up. It must be every day, multiple times a day, really, if I were to stop and think about it, which just makes it kind of easy, right? And because, like you said, Anne, the kids are always asking, I mean, some days it's just nonstop with all the questions. Like, there really is so much curiosity there that we don't even have time to get into all of it. But I was thinking about that too with science. Science covers so much, right? Like, and in school for myself growing up, you know, there was the curriculum to follow. So we would spend, you know, whatever, 3 weeks on this one and then 3 weeks on this. So whatever you were interested in, you'd only get a little bit of, you wouldn't really get to go down that. You'd have to cover all of it. And I think that that's like, when I think about what my kids have been into when it comes to science, we certainly have covered like a variety of things, but like my one kiddo, really loves animals. So, you know, there's so much covered in that over the years. And there's like a little period where there was interest in the solar system and we spent some time on that. And then they moved past that. But yeah, for myself in school, it was very divided. And it was like, okay, this is science right now. And I didn't really think of it as like science through just everyday things that we were doing and exploring. And I was just focused on, what do I need to know for the test? What do I need to, you know, learn to do a good job on my project or my assignment? And so same like what you were saying, April, I didn't really think I was that into science. But now as a homeschool parent, that's like the most fun stuff that we get into. And it's, and it doesn't I mean, sometimes sure, we'll pull stuff out and we'll do like a science experiment. But most of the time, it just happens naturally and along with other things that we're doing. And I find it probably, I mean, I think anyway, kind of the easiest thing for us to get into, because they'll just ask the questions and there we go. Or they won't even ask the questions. It'll just be like, today we're out in forest school, we're outside and you know, there's just science all around you. Like there's the weather and the little creatures and their habitats and stuff. Like it really is just all around you. So we're just covering it every day as we go.
I do find it's the most unschooly of the topics. It's so easy to have it just roll out. And like before we were going to get started today, I'd ask my son, I threw him a couple questions and I was like, what would you tell someone like if they wanted to get interested in science? And he just looked at me, he's like, get out there in it. Just go.
Oh, I love that.
Well, what would you like? How would you help somebody retain their curiosity? And he's like, I don't know. I've just always been curious. And he's like, oh, look, Mom, is that a tanager out the window? And it's like, then we have to stop. And so I can't tell you how many times we've been almost late recently or late even to birding events because of birds. You know, because like they say, science is to be indulged. So it's like you stop and you go, oh, yeah, what was that? Like, let's grab the binoculars. Let's do that. And it just happens. It's just there. There are so many opportunities. And sometimes you don't necessarily have time to go like all the way in. And Erin, like you said, you may not have the interest to go all the way in. So sometimes when they can lob you a question, you might just lob it back and be like, well, what do you think? Or have you considered that? Whereas other times, I mean, we can get lost for a day in a heartbeat. Here or a weekend, as I just posted, like everything on that post for the weekend was like science from start to finish, I realized later. And it's something we never plan. I don't plan science. There was a point in schooling where, like, in my planner, I usually reverse plan because here we have to track certain things. And I would try to figure out like what my sidebar things were going to be. Like, I've got basics, reading, games and activities, like what I'm going to log, what's important. And I had a science category and then I realized it was never getting filled. Like, I was never planning anything. I was like, this is kind of crazy. Like, we're science lovers and I never have science on my day. But yeah, I don't plan it. 'Cause if I try to plan it, it falls on its face. Mm-hmm. We're not that kind of science people, but mm-hmm. it happens constantly if you let it.
Mm-hmm. It's more fun when it finds you, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, April, I wanted to jump back to, I think you were talking about dissection in your high school science. For me, it was the Bunsen burner because I'm not a fan. I'm nervous around fire and just heat, basically. I mean, I've worked through it. We do campfires and whatnot. But at that age, just in that like small space, I did not feel confident at all with the Bunsen burner. And I feel sometimes like those experiences are like, they're such a limited piece of what science even is. Yeah. They're such a small, so you think about that, you know, you're a little bit nervous. Or I also was nervous of I was very nervous of that particular teacher. And it just felt, I don't know, I just remember it feeling like a high pressure situation, the Bunsen burner, the teacher that made me nervous, the whole thing. And so it does, you kind of get this thing in your mind of like, oh, I'm not a science person. Or, and it's, I mean, lighting a Bunsen burner is, it's not even, you know, in the, when you think about the way the world works, it's a very, very small piece. But I guess at those ages and in the way that subjects are introduced, we kind of connect it with a negative emotional experience that we're having, you know, in that class rather than the kind of material itself. So I totally relate to that. And I think another one that I felt that way about was geography. I didn't connect well to like my high school, my grade 9 geography class. And it's really ironic now because I am such a geography person. I have my nose to map every day and it's very connected to science. So for me, it's like when I'm out, I'm always interested. I'm like, I wonder if this area has this particular wildflower, or I wonder, you know, if this bird happens to migrate here. And so the two weave together for me a lot, where I'm looking at maps and I'm just curious, right, about how that all kind of works with various wildlife. But I would never have understood that at that age. So it is very freeing, really, to just see how kind of how everything intersects and how, I don't know, just how massive it all is. Mm-hmm. And I think too, that kind of brought, we were thinking a little bit about the idea of like whether science is its own separate subject, which it can be. I think anything, you can take anything, I think, and dive into it for its own sake. But Anne, like when you're describing it, to me, it sounds like it would almost ruin it in a way for you guys to say, okay, we're doing science this afternoon, because it would, I don't know, I may be putting words in your mouth, but it feels like it would kind of cheapen or something, or damper down the natural way that you that you guys were just diving into it.
I was actually just thinking, I've got an example from the post the other day, because the weekend post started with that video of him swinging out over the river and falling in. And so, you know, like I said, there have been times where I'm like, huh, we don't actually like do science. And so I would occasionally go to be like, is there anything maybe fun out there that's a little bit more structured that maybe I could lob his way? And, you know, since we like science, we'll try it. And so I had found one book that we had gotten, and technically it's enjoyable. If we were forced to do science curriculum, that would be the one. However, it's still science curriculum. We still have to gather parts and pieces. We still have to plan for it. So I think we are on chapter 3, and I bought it, I don't know how many months ago. But so the chapter we're stuck on right now is all about pendulums. And so I'm sitting there watching him with this friend he's made try to lob a swing back and forth, where one's in the water, just swung, trying to toss it back. Or after she went, he was trying to be in the water and throw it back hard enough to catch it as he ran up. And it's like, who needs a lesson on pendulums? I mean, I think any kid with any kind of swing, especially over a river, understands that the momentum will slow. And that's such a more fun way to explore the idea of this momentum and pendulum and all this stuff than going and gathering a bunch of materials and going, okay, step one is this and step two is that. So yeah, it just doesn't work for us. Whereas that's just intuitive to do it that way.
Isn't it just wild now to think about learning science inside? I mean, I think that's what it is, right? It's like now we have all experienced this natural learning of science, like in nature, in the world where science happens. And then just like you said, Anne, you try and like take this thing and just look at it as a subject that you have to learn out of a book or out of a curriculum or sit at a desk. And it's like, it's a completely, completely different thing. And it's no wonder that so many kids grow up thinking that it's not interesting, because they're not actually experiencing it, right? They're like learning it through somebody else, someone else's experience. It's a shame.
I mean, I think about some of the, you know, because the whole pendulum thing really is physics, right? So I think about some of the physics pieces that that we all are doing every day, and kind of like you're both saying, a lot of it's instinct and a lot of it's trial and error. But I mean, I even thinking back to when my kids were littler and we were making, you know, bird feeders, we would sometimes do like oranges or grapefruits and put, I don't, different materials, pipe cleaners, different things to hang them from branches. And they don't have to be very old before they start to realize that if you put that at the very tip of the branch, it's either going to break the little twig or it's going to slide off. And so they start to realize, you know, it bears weight better if you move it back toward where there's a, you know, a connecting branch or a connecting twig. And these are the things that we do all the time without realizing it. But you could probably write up a whole lesson on that. And sometimes it is, like, I will say sometimes the theory of things is quite interesting. But it's only interesting if it's it's only interesting if it's relevant in the moment, right? And if it's, I mean, at that age, they've already learned to do that before they would be old enough to be understanding the theory of it. So there's something there to me that's interesting, that we are, in my mind, we're always working beyond, how can I put it? Our practical capabilities develop earlier than the time that we would be able to read and understand that information in written language. So it does kind of beg the question of the order that we tend to think we need to do things in. You know, we need to read this so the kids understand it, and then we go explore it. And I mean, there are times, I can think of times where we were maybe going to a museum or we were going to see something that was happening in nature, and I thought, oh, it would be interesting to know about this ahead of time. So that to me is not to say that we wouldn't read books on it ahead of time and kind of gather a lot of information on it. But to assume that like we instruct it and then they find out about it is just a really backwards way, particularly with science I think, kind of all the subjects. It really has to be played with, I think, to really understand it.
Yeah, and I think that it's what you're saying about like what's going to be interesting, which is true for all of it. But with science, like I was saying, it covers so much stuff and not one person's going to be interested in absolutely all of it. And I feel like, actually, I'm having a bit of a flashback from quite a few years ago now, at least 3 years ago, where there was a school friend, like a friend over that went to school, and the kids, they got into a conversation, and I think it was about like rocks and like gemstones and stuff like that. And the friend, my kids were really into it. My eldest was really into like rocks and, you know, going out and searching and finding all the different rocks and everything. We would get books out from the library that would, you know, explain like the different layers of the earth crust. I don't even know all of that. I was listening in on the conversation, and the one friend, they must've been covering it at school. And he was coming up with all the like terminology, and my kids were like, it got into a little bit of like a kind of like a quizzing situation. And I could tell the friend, it was like fresh on his mind. Like he had just learned all of it. And my kids were like, you know, had heard some of the words or remembered some of the words or something, but we didn't do, you know, unless like maybe we read it out of one of the library books or something. I wasn't worried about, like the different names for the different rocks and things like that. There's been a couple different times where that's happened where I've thought, that's so interesting. Like my kids have explored something. So like in this case, like rocks and minerals and gemstones out of interest and out of collecting, and they get whatever they get out of it. Right. But I've never worried about, have they learned everything I think they should know about this area because they've been interested in it, and try to like, you know, give them everything. I remember my kids afterwards kind of feeling like they didn't, like, did they not know enough about that? And it was interesting hearing them talk a little bit about it afterwards too. And I had to kind of say, you know, everyone retains different pieces of information. And it sounds like your friend had learned these specific like terminologies and definitions and everything, because that's what mattered in class that day, or maybe for a quiz that they were going to have. And I think we ended up talking about like how we can always Google stuff, because that's what we often do when we have questions, right? We quickly look something up. And I remember asking like, do you think if you learned all of this stuff, would you remember it forever? Probably not. Like we'll remember some and we'll forget some, but we can always like Google it if we want to know the name of one of these things, which would be true for whatever. But yeah, it was just interesting, like thinking about the different experience that they had compared to a friend. Not to say one way is better than the other, but just I don't like thankfully get caught up in worrying, like kind of feeling the pressure to cover, I guess, what they would be covering if they were in school, but rather just being like, here's all the library books, here's maybe some YouTube videos, here's the actual things, let's go out and find it. And if you want to go further, great. And if you're done with it, which of course eventually they were, then we move on to whatever else.
Mm. Science can be such a great equalizer that way, where like if they weren't as into it at a certain time, they may not know all the terms, but then if they are into it, there's a lot of subjects where maybe the kid and the much older person can't be on the same level. But I find in science, you can. You know, it's like when we did our birding trip the other day, you know, I walk up to this group of birders and they're all discussing their 80th birthday they just had or are about to have, and I'm walking up with a 9-year-old and I'm like fingers crossed on how this is gonna go. And some of them are talking about like binoculars that cost thousands of dollars and I have a $30 pair and we're completely self-taught, and I was no bird expert going in, so I'm like, this might be fun this morning. And yet, you know, if you have a passion, like you're asking your kids, like, are you necessarily going to remember this? You know, there's been plenty of things I've exposed him to that didn't stick. However, in birding, he and I went in at the same time. I followed his interest in it. we have been doing like the trivia and whatnot. Kid has beat my butt.
Yeah.
He will see a bird and be like, oh, that's a blah, blah, blah. And I'll go, huh, what? I didn't know that bird existed. You know, and he'll have remembered the colors and the patterns and the names. And so he was off and running with the birding group. And I was kind of bringing up the rear because he could hang with these people who have been doing this for decades and know all the materials. Like if you've got that passion, mm-hmm. if you've got the basis that we're already giving them and the freedom to find that passion and interest, that then when they want to, I mean, now I can do the same thing with bees if you want to get me started on bees, but he's got the birds. And so he'll be able to tell you all the everything.
There's a joke. Off. There's a joke in there somewhere. There's a bird and bees.
Yeah, they yeah, they were thoroughly impressed with them and were trying to remember the word for, like, you know, that kid who just starts off so young knowing everything and just leaps straight into something, and like mm-hmm. isn't it like that wunderkind or whatever, you know? And they were really thrilled to have him along and how much he knew. And he'd be like, oh, there's a so-and-so, and they would find it and pick it out. So like you can get there so fast if you're allowed to explore the stuff that's interesting rather than the stuff that's in the package.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Love that you gave that example, Anne, because I just want to quickly add, because it made me think about my youngest is really into dogs. So same thing, we've got a couple library books with like lots of different dog breeds, and he's had multiple conversations because it's kind of come back up again where he's really focused on dogs and dog breeds. And he's had conversations with neighbors over the last few weeks. They'll be walking their dog and he'll want to guess like the dog breed, and then he'll have some facts in his head because he's just so interested in it right now. And of course the adults are always like so impressed, and we do trivia too. So it's, I love how you shared that example. It's so true that if they're interested in it, sometimes they can go really far. And then yeah, they're conversing with, you know, maybe adults who have been interested in it for years. So yeah, I think that's really cool.
The problem was those adults probably had to wait till they were adults.
Yes.
You know?
They had the time and freedom once they were older.
Yeah. And that's this really cool thing right now, is if they have the freedom, it's not like they have to go and look it up in the encyclopedia, right? It's like, I talked about this story a little bit on the last episode, but what you're both describing is exactly like my son's passion for fishing. And it was like, he went on YouTube, figured everything out. He knows everything about the fishing rods and how to catch them and about all the different types of fish. So he's pulling them up and he's talking about what kind of fish it is. And I still really don't know anything, except I can, you know, he taught me how to cast. That's sort of where my learning just.
So I always say I'm probably the only birder who can't see the birds. Yeah. You
know? Aw,
I was making a joke while we were out there. It's like, I have a lot of fun being out there. It's a good thing I'm a nature person, but right? I'm a really lousy birder because yeah. I can't really see what we're looking at.
That's the thing, right? But it's like, it is, it's fun. You go out there and just, but to see them like take this knowledge that they have just, you know, caught themselves, figured it out, and to be hanging out with these adults and all these people who have been doing these things for years, it's just, it's remarkable. And it's hard not to feel like this great sense of pride in them too, right? When you can sort of step back and be like, yeah, I couldn't have this conversation with you, but my kid, yeah, just, you know, he'll talk about this stuff all day. It's really, really a neat experience as a parent.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's kind of like each of you are talking about how, I'm not quite as sure with Ashley, but probably, but Anne and April, like it feels like their interest in like birds and fish, and Ashley'd be interested to hear about the dog breeds too. But it goes beyond ours, because a part of it's their passion for it. But there are things that I'm passionate about that my kids are also passionate about. And sometimes they just learn in a different way. And all of a sudden I realize that they just have amassed all this knowledge and skill in something, and they've moved beyond where I am. So I feel like it flips the kind of traditional thought that we have around like teacher and learner, where we kind of have this We have to be the passer on of information. And I think when you are learning in partnership or you're just facilitating your kids learning, all of a sudden you're kind of like, oh, wow, no, they're way, they're way beyond me in this particular area. Like something that comes to mind for me is when my daughter was volunteering with an endangered bird project at a provincial park. And I had to go the first several months because she wasn't 18 yet. And they have a rule, you know, for better or for worse, that until you're 18, you can't volunteer on your own. It's probably not a bad rule. You're out on the beach on your own for a long time. And, you know, there's lots of pieces to that. But anyway, long story short, we both went to the orientation. So there was like a video orientation, then there was another orientation. The biologist was back and forth quite a bit. So she was sort of doing like a natural orientation. There was loads of information in the binder. And my daughter retained it so much better than I did. I just couldn't even believe that we'd been at the same, like we literally had the same information. And yeah, she was just identifying shorebirds more easily than I was. She was understanding the steps. There were certain things with their banding that we really had to be watching for. And it was also great because I could sit back and enjoy because like she had it. She knew she was just understanding the information on a different level. So I think it's also just kind of relieving to see like we do not have to be the passers on of all this information because actually our kids are super capable. And the other area I find this in is because this is a type of science as well, like how things work and putting things together. And so whether it's like technology or whether it's like hands-on mechanical stuff, I'm definitely in both of those areas, not as strong as anybody else in my family. And so I think now having older kids, I can really see like they're so much stronger than I am in like 100 ways. So it just really flips. And I actually wonder, I don't know, I wonder how much of that possibly has to do with being conventionally schooled. And I think there's a little bit of a block in my head that there's a lot of things I can't do. So it takes me a long time to get past that. And I'm not sure if it's related to that. It could also be personality, or it could just be that my kids are more competent at a lot of things than I am. Like that could just be the case. But there's something there where they will just try stuff. And so they get better at it. Whereas I have a lot of things that I don't even think to enter into because I don't know if I'm going to be good at it. And I think when it comes to something like science, the willingness to dive in and get your hands dirty and explore and not worry so much about like passing or failing, like you're just exploring. I think that really goes a long way because you just dive in there and you can't learn without trying stuff out.
That was a thought I was having earlier today is that I think one of the fun things that makes science so good for the unschooling aspect is that it's one of those places where you don't have to worry about what you don't know, you know, because it is so much of that. What happens if I do this and why should that work this way? And how does this go? Like, it's so exploratory that who cares if you don't know it? You know, you can totally go explore it together and then it becomes real and live as opposed to this thing over here in a box where we're going to learn this subject today. It's just, let's try it out and let's test it and maybe it won't work or maybe we're going to crash and burn or maybe we'll have a breakthrough or what's your hypothesis? You know, it's like, it's a dialogue. Science is very much a dialogue as opposed to just, so here's the rules. And if you apply these, you will arrive at this result over here. And that's like, that's the part I love. We so often, we head out that way. Just like, if I'm going to plan science, it'll be like, let's go for a hike today. Yeah. You know, where that's kind of like the other day we had gone for a rainy day hike when we were exploring mist. And the whole idea was, let's see if we find rabbit holes, you know? So you're like, I love that he's just always tuned in where he does have that curiosity and just probing and exploring where we're walking down a rainy trail wearing ponchos. You can't hear anything, you know, like if you're wearing a poncho and getting rained on, there's you pretty sensory deprived. And then he stopped and I had that one picture of him where he's looking up, and you may notice, like, I left one eye in there. They get so blue. His eyes get so blue in the woods. I call it his forest blue eyes. And he's looking up because in the midst of all this going on with the rain and the poncho, he's found this teeny tiny inchworm dangling down out of a tree that he's just like, he finds that stuff all the time. And then they always lead to like this question and then the next question and the next question. He's asked me so many questions I don't know, and I'm pretty science literate. And I love that he can so often have something where I go, I have no idea. And then it'll get me thinking, and then I'll toss a question at him of, well, could it be this? And like, that's just the way we flow all the time with that.
Yeah. I loved what you said there, Anne. I think it was something like science is a dialogue. I'm going to have to go back and listen, but the idea that it isn't like a set, I don't know what your words were, but the idea that I took from it is that it's quite open-ended rather than closed. But I suspect that a lot of people actually think of science as a subject that is very, you know, scientific method. Even a lot of the ways that experiments are set up, they really aren't experiments. You know, they're sort of like, you do this, and this will happen. Yeah. So really what you're doing is, you know, if you look in the average kind of science experiment book, you're trying to see if you can get the effect that you're supposed to get. And I do remember doing those with the kids where it was like, okay, we'll add this chemical and this chemical, and let's see if it, you know, bursts the way that they say it's going to. And so if it didn't, it's like, oh, we better try again. And it was fun, but that is really more of like a demonstration of something that somebody's already figured out. It's not really experimenting. It's just confirming somebody else's finding and seeing if you can do it right. So I love the way you put that, because it just felt so, I don't know. It's just like you're being curious and you're figuring things out together. And from that, sometimes some expertise happens if it's meant to. Like April, I don't know if your son would be okay with, you know, you sharing this, but I'd be so interested to hear like what's happening with the fishing interest. Is it still full throttle?
If we had more opportunities to go fishing, yes. Like if I asked him right now, hey, do you want to go fishing? For sure, he would want to do it. We were lucky this year. We were in Canada and there was just a little man-made lake that was stocked 5 minutes from my parents' house. And so that accessibility really helped a lot, right? We were able to just be out there every day and enjoying. And, you know, I really resonated with what you said, Aaron, about like, it's sort of freeing when you realize that they've got it. It's like, I was just enjoying hanging out on the dock. I'm getting, you know, all these accolades for being, oh, you're the awesome mom that's taking your kid out for several hours a day fishing. And I'm thinking, no, actually I'm doing nothing. I'm just sitting there enjoying the lake. And because that fear was gone, like initially I was like, is he going to get, you know, hook himself in the face with the fishing hook? Or what happens if the fish swallows the hook? Or how is he going to get it off? And after a day or two, I was like, oh, like he's got all this under control and I don't have to worry about this anymore. So, sorry, I got a little off track there, but I think right now he would definitely still enjoy going fishing whenever he could. But right now he would really love to have a buddy fishing with him. So trying to find the fishing buddy and the lake close by. And I also don't have help with the younger sister all the time. So it's a matter of having all of those pieces come together. We can't get out there as much. But I know I feel like it's just going to be a lifelong interest of his. And when he's able to do it, he will just jump at the chance. And he's got, actually, what's cool, really cool now is that he's found a bunch of different video games that are related to fishing as well. And he's doing those online with his buddies and they're talking about the fish. And he's sort of still feeding that in a different way. But it's just really fun to listen to him and to just hear him get excited about anything basically related to fishing.
No, I love that. And I think too, like, that's such a good point that it doesn't have to be, okay, I'm interested in this, because I think we hear about these deep dives people do. And so the assumption is it just goes on and on the same way, but it doesn't need to, right? It can shift into something else. It can go away for a little while. It can resurface. There's no rule to any of it. It's going to be different for everybody. And I got thinking about, well, Ashley, you had mentioned, I think people in the neighborhood talking about the dog breeds. And then Anne, you'd mentioned the birders, like the senior citizen birders who you were connecting with. And then April, last time we talked, I know that some of this fishing, an integral part of the fishing story happened with an older man who was kind of giving your son some tips. And it leads me to thinking about how people are so interested in engaging when our kids have an interest. Well, even if we do, right? About something, people like to talk about their specific interests, and often people like to give information. So to your point, Anne, that you don't really have to be an expert or you don't have to have all the right answers. Sometimes I find if I'm out and I'm talking about something with somebody, I actually know more about it than they even think I do, but they're so eager to talk about it that you just kind of let it roll, right? Like, people love to talk about those kind of things, like those special interests that they have. So I don't know, if I love that that I guess our kids have those opportunities to be talking with people who actually have a common interest, rather than just necessarily being with same age peers doing whatever's assigned, to actually be able to talk to people that are passionate about the same things just elevates the learning, I feel like.
I found that was just really invaluable. Like, we had done it one other time. It was their last spring walk. So there was only two men there. But I mean, again, they were wonderful. And when we got done, they were talking with him. Like, I was off to the side. I wasn't obviously needed for the conversation about, like, making the checklist and going over all the species and deciding on the count and showing them all that. And so again, this time, you know, just the way that they would bring them in and, like, they'd show them through their big expensive cameras and all that. So you get a close up and talk about the little nitty gritty details of trying to identify fall warblers, which is a whole nother ball game from spring warblers. And I couldn't even see the spring warblers, so how I would ever identify the fall warblers, you know? And so it's partially getting that extra bit of information that from the people who are just there doing it all the time, but also just that connection of, like, this isn't some crazy thing I'm doing off in the corner. Here's other people who also love what I do. And it just validates that interest, and it helps to just fuel it and fill it. And like, we're saying how I can come and go. He was not verbal when he fell in love with birds. He had just turned two when a family friend who loved birds knew he loved birds and decided to buy him a feeder. And it has grown, but it hasn't been like this year. I don't even know what it, I think it was the Merlin app this year. It had been at that spring birding thing where they were talking about Merlin, and we finally tried it out, and it opened up a whole nother dimension. And so, like, this year it's been game on. It may fall back a little bit more next year, or maybe it'll push forward for a while. I don't know. But I am not so much like, let's wake up at 6:30 in the morning on a Saturday and go join the birders. But I have to remember how much value that brings. Like, it was, his grin was just ear to ear. It's like, this was fantastic. I love this. So yeah, when you can connect with somebody who has that thing that, like, he was born with it. I had nothing to do with this bird interest. He's brought me in and I love it, but just letting him see other people who share a passion that he was born with, like, that's really important. And I just need to help make that enough, like, bring those opportunities about.
I bet. And has he had a chance to share that passion with other kids, or teach or tell other kids about birds? And
I wondered, I'm thinking maybe next spring, like before the spring migration, I might put out feelers to see if anybody in the homeschool community might have birding kids. I don't know of any. So there had been one of our forest places here was several years ago, was going to put out like a birding by ear class. It wasn't really supposed to be for kids of the age he would have been then, but I was going to kind of force my way into it for him. Because sometimes, like, they might say, oh, it's for adults, but they don't realize a kid can come and not be a disruption. But that place got wiped out by a hurricane. And so there has not, because they had talked about offering one for kids. So, like, there's nothing out there for us to have found the kids. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I've been curious about that and wondering, because he hasn't been able to have that element of it. It's just been the older folks so far.
Yeah. My daughter was able to join something, because it was about a year and a half ago, through the Canadian Wildlife Federation. And it was a youth, I think it was 13 to 18, because she aged out of it about a few months ago when she was turning 19. And it wasn't birding specific, but it was like basically wildlife and conservation specific. So youth that were interested in that. So that was kind of cool, because that was the only thing that I had seen that kind of brought people together with a common interest. And of course, I shouldn't say of course, it kind of didn't surprise me. It wasn't hugely well attended, because I just don't think, I don't know if I feel like kids have time. Like, I feel like a lot of teenagers are very low on time. So the opportunity to do that kind of thing, I feel like there might have been more interest than there were kids who had time and parents that were willing to, you know, kind of make it happen. But sometimes I have this image of like kids who have these really well-developed interests. I mean, I could even see it with the fishing too, April, where kids who are in school or maybe are busy in other ways don't have as much time to dive into that kind of stuff. So it's almost like they have to wait until those kids get to be, you know, like, I've always been interested in birds, but I didn't become as interested until like middle age. So it's almost like they may have to wait a little while for people to catch up to them and really have like same age peers who are interested in those things, because I do feel like a lot of it is senior citizens, or maybe a little bit younger than that. Mm-hmm. We kind of have those.
Yeah, time makes a big difference, doesn't it? It's funny, I was thinking, I think because we were planning this conversation, I was thinking about this yesterday. One of my, one of our favorite sort of accidental science lessons that has happened around here has actually become a daily part of our life since, I guess, last December. So it's an ongoing science lesson. And this was actually, I don't know if you're all familiar with what an anole lizard is. I'm sure you are, Anne. There's these tiny green lizards. I mean, it's probably about, you know, 3 or 4 inches long. It was a little baby and found its way into our house, which these things often happen in the South in the winter. So my daughter found him in the bedroom closet and brought him out, and somehow over the last several months has tamed this wild lizard who is now our pet, Lizzie. But what's super cool about it is that, you know, she doesn't know. It's not like she did a bunch of research. We did a little bit of research. We found out what we needed to do to keep the lizard alive, but we basically call her the lizard whisperer now, because she can walk around with this lizard on her hand. She has taught all of her neighborhood friends about the lizard, how to hold the lizard, how to take care of it. And it's been amazing to watch her just kind of own this role, this, you know, lizard whisperer role, and take responsibility for taking care of this little thing, and just how that has also transferred to all these other little creatures that she sees outside as well. You know, she'll see a little bug, oh, bugs love me, oh, little creatures love me, come here, little guy. And she's the one that wants to pick up the frogs and pick up the other things. And it's just been such a neat thing that is totally unexpected. But also, I think yesterday when I was watching her do this, and, you know, not to mention all the things that I have learned, about lizards through this experience and how we've all become accustomed to feeding it live crickets and things like that. But I was just thinking yesterday that, you know, our little Lizzie is in this cage and, you know, it's kind of like a giant fish tank, but she can go in there and take him out and play with him anytime she wants. And she doesn't have to put him back until she's ready. And I was thinking, you know, in a classroom situation, even though, you know, it's sweet that, you know, sometimes in a classroom, they'll have a class pet or whatever that will sit there in the cage. It's like, it's just completely different because you've got, you know, 25 or 30 kids that are sharing this class pet. And, you know, probably once a week or once every day, somebody takes a turn to take it home or take it out or whatever it is. And we're just so fortunate that with this lifestyle that we have, everything is so freeing and open-ended and experimental, as you said, Anne. Like you said, Erin, I was just so in envy, Anne, of the way you describe science. And it was actually like such a beautiful way to describe it. And I can't believe that I'm at, you know, this stage of my life and only seeing it that way now. Like, even though I've always loved nature and I've suddenly, you know, become the type of person that loves gardening and loves all these things that are outside, never have I ever thought of those things as science before. It's like that word was just tainted from my upbringing, and just it became this scary, intimidating thing. You know, going back to what you were saying, Anne, about like there is no answer and everything's an experiment. And I think Ashley and Erin, I was kind of watching all of our body language. It's like, no, when you're in school, there's a right answer and there's a wrong answer. And if you get it wrong, you know you get it wrong. And I think I feel a little bit sad as well about, you know, my years as an elementary school teacher, because that attitude about science, that feeling about science transferred to that environment as well for me. It's like, as an elementary school teacher, you're a generalist and you've got, you know, kind of 9 subjects that you're covering, and you know that there are some that you love and that you're good at, and some that you maybe don't feel that way and you're not that good at. And it's okay, you know, you kind of do what you can to get through it. But it's like, man, if I had this attitude about science back then that I have now, like, I could have really gotten those kids excited about it. I would have made sure that we were outside, or I was bringing the outside in, or, and it's the tools as well, right? We've got so many different tools at our disposal now than when I taught, you know, it was almost 20 years ago. But it's, again, it's just interesting how that shift in perspective just changes all of these different aspects of life. I think that's what keeps going around in my head.
Yeah, I keep thinking about, as we're talking, this bringing science into the classroom or any type of structured lesson is really hard, not impossible. And I think there's ways that it can be done, I guess, but yeah, you're taking something so natural that you can, because it's not even just, and I think a lot of times, like, I would have thought science experiments, but it's not just that, right? Like, it's going outside and just experiencing the weather, the water cycle, like all this stuff that you're just living through and talking about it through conversations, or not talking about it and just observing it, or watching like the four seasons, right? So like going back to you know, the same spot in the winter, spring, and through all, and watching the trees change and the same space change. And yeah, like it's very hard when you have to bring that into a classroom setting, and keep it exciting and enjoyable. Right. Whereas, so it's, I just keep thinking about how like science is, like what you were saying, Anne, at the beginning, science is so easy in an unschooling way, because you just go out and you just experience it all the time, and it happens, you know, inside too, of course, but when you try to teach it in a more structured, formal way, like in a classroom, it just takes the excitement out of it. Like I'm thinking about like things like you know, like life cycles, like learning about animal life cycles. Oh, I don't want to plan a lesson around that. Because we're just outside and we see it and then we talk about it and then that's what you will remember. So I just, yeah, I keep thinking about that as well. It's really interesting.
Well, and
the science experimenting is hard. There's a whole box. Like you've all been saying, like that's how we are. Where everyone's in a blue moon. Like for the Halloween thing, I had that little kit I bought. And so every now and then it's fun to do a few. But yeah. They last for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's steps 1 through 3. And then Erin, like you said, like you're supposed to get that result. And if you didn't, something went wrong. And it's just not that fun. If we're gonna do something like that, he likes some of the ones that are it's more of an open-ended thing. Like he likes the I'm not much for making what do you call it, like the goo. Everybody
oh, makes slime.
Like slime. Yeah.
Oh, I hate the slime.
Yeah. So that's like such a big thing. And then the early years, like family centers we would go to, is always like slime this and slime that. And
yeah,
I'm not much of a slime person, but he loved the one where it's like water and cornstarch and he would just play. Yeah. And then next thing you know, he'd have like all his toy cars and stuff in the slime and seeing how they react and dripping over and running over. So it's like ones like that we could do. Or if it's like Erin, you had talked in your, was it in the email about like your daughter mixing colors. He would like it when he was little. If I just got cups of water with some food coloring and he could start mixing. I mean, everything came out black in no time, but he still had a lot of fun with it. Mm-hmm. But if it's an actual, like, here's our experiment and this is going to happen. It's hard to make it last for more than 5 minutes and be worth the investment of setting everything up.
Yeah. I was going to say the one thing that I strew, science-y, I think anyway, and I've done it for years. And I mean, they enjoyed it definitely more when they were younger, but even now still, if I put it out, kids like mixing stuff together. Right. But the baking soda, vinegar and food coloring, mm-hmm. not that that would necessarily always last forever, but like the water and cornstarch, right? Like they can play with it for a while. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's still kind of open-ended. Right. And they see the, like something that has a reaction, but is easy to get to and they can do it on their own. It's not them. I'm not demonstrating, right? Like I probably showed them the first time. Where I feel like a lot of times if I were to set up like a formal science experiment, I have to be very involved if it's going to go the way it's meant to go, like what you were talking about, Erin. But the baking soda, vinegar and food coloring, that is something I'll put out sciencey that the kids will always, they'll always spend at least 5 minutes doing that.
And it's good drain cleaner. So I learned to just set it up in the sink and I would just give him the jug and the box and like have at all day long.
So smart.
Okay, I have so many. I'm still back with some stuff that you said, April, and then Ashley, you added, and I have things, and now Anne. Okay, so I've got to figure out.
Sorry, Erin.
No,
it's all with a game plan now, Erin.
Got to figure out what I want to. I'll work backwards. So, Anne, you just talked about the drain cleaner thing, because I think that's the other piece: is how much science are we just learning on a practical level, and it has nothing necessarily to do with like a passion necessarily. Like that's the other thing I really notice a lot of is just in the fixing things or the figuring stuff out, especially as they get older, you know, and they're doing everything but from maybe having a car to helping with repairs or in their own place figuring stuff out. It's so much practical stuff. Like that's the other thing is there's the passion end of it. And then there's just, we're kind of like dealing with science all the time, whether it's clogged drains, you know, plugged toilets, like who knows, it could be any number of things that we're always kind of working with science. And so there's just like a natural element to that. They're going to be doing that because we all have to do that. We all have to kind of understand how, the things that we're using work, and when they're not working, you know, can we troubleshoot? So there's, to me, there's that practical element to science as well, but it's not always about their passion or a fun explosion or whatever. It's also just about daily life. But then you'd also said, Anne, about, I think you were talking about the cornstarch and how there would end up being like cars and stuff in it, right? So that's the other thing I think is that when we don't have this idea that everything is separated, what you start to see, like that's like pretend play, happening in a scientific, you know, mixture of some kind. And I would think that even kind of going back to this endangered bird species with my daughter, a lot of that interest for her was not scientific, except that she was learning science as a byproduct. So a lot of it was artistic. So she's done a lot of sketching, studying of birds so that she can sketch them and kind of understand their details. A lot of it is ethics. It's a conservation interest for her. And a lot of it is just this real sort of, I wouldn't even say, April, like, she's not a super hands-on person. I feel like your daughter would be banding the birds, and it's not even like that for my daughter. It's just a genuine sort of interest in conservation. And so not everybody has to have the same, because I had a lot of people say to me, oh, does she want to become a biologist? Is she? And I'm like, no, I don't think so. I don't think it's about that for her. I think she's interested in different pieces of it. But the science learning, it's like those things are a portal basically into the science. So I love that too, just how these things are so interconnected. I mean, think about when we're all talking about like this outdoor time and nature walks. I mean, they're also getting exercise. We're also probably having conversation about other things. There's contemplative thinking and philosophical thinking that I do when I'm out in nature. So it's not like I'm just out looking at species. Often it's just, I notice them when I'm getting exercise or I'm getting fresh air. So yeah, I just wanted to say, I just love how things interconnect, and it's not just like, we're going on a nature walk right now. Like we can, but there's usually more to it. Or there's often more to it than that. Like,
I think it's important to, like, to that point of, like, when I've said, if I'm going to plan science, it will be, let's go on a hike. One thing to always keep in mind is, like, nature does not perform on cue at all. So it never works to say, we're going to go examine X today, because X probably didn't get the memo and is not going to play the part. So for us, it's just, let's go without like a thought. And then, you know, we may bring along books, or it may be about the picnic, or it may be about doing a little piece of art or whatever else it is. And then as you are there, you're just tuning in, and it's just learning how to tune in. And all of a sudden, like I said, he'll be walking down the trail, and then there's the little thingy hanging down. You know, like that happens all the time with him, where he'll just walk by and pluck off a little exoskeleton from a piece of bark, where it's like, if you're out there, you have the opportunity. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. We've had walks where we've come back and haven't necessarily found thrilling things, you know, or much that we've stumbled on. And then other times it's just like every step, you just have to allow yourself the chance to be there without a plan and with some time and with just an open mind to whatever's going to come, and be willing to just let it happen. If you go with a plan, that better be the time you're like bringing materials to keep yourself occupied, like going on the hawk watch and having the only hawk be the one we saw is before we got in the car. Yeah. You know, It does not work if you come with a plan. But if you can just go wander and say, I wonder what might happen today, then it works.
Go ahead, April.
Oh, and I was just going to say, and isn't it so much more fun when it's a surprise?
Yeah.
You know, it's fun and it's memorable, right? It becomes this just amazing,
like an Easter egg hunt,
life learning experience. Yeah, exactly. Those are the things that they're going to remember, not the thing that you spent, you know, 2 days planning, and then you have all these expectations as the parent or the teacher, like, oh, they're going to love this. Oh, they're going to love this. And then it flops. And not only do you feel, you know, bad about all this time that you spent and disappointed, but they don't remember it at all. So I just, yeah. I love the way that you talked about that. And that's exactly what it is. And Ashley, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay. I just feel like I'm excited because I have an example from 2 years ago of what we're talking about, where we just went out on a hike, and I can't remember specifically what month it was. I could look back in my pictures, because that's the other thing with having the phone all the time. I've documented so much of this, which is an awesome way to just kind of keep track. But it was probably 2 years ago, I think sometime in the fall. And we just went out on a hike. I had no expectations other than let's get out of the house and go be outside. And it was like an Easter egg hunt, because there were so many mushrooms that we were finding, all the different fungi, that it became so exciting. I mean, I think we, it's not, it wasn't, you know, we would have seen some and we've thought, oh, neat. And then we would have seen a little bit more. And then we realized that it was that time of year. We even came across the giant puffball ones. And it was so fun. It was, and so we still talk about it. So it's definitely, it was memorable and I could not have planned it. Actually, I tried to recreate it the following year. And of course we found nothing. So I don't know what, I didn't go back to the exact same spot at the exact same time. That probably would have made the difference. But I remember thinking it was just so random and it was so cool. And it really made such an enjoyable hike to just, I mean, I've never seen so much, like so many different fungi in like one hike. And we had the Seek app out. I think it's also like iNaturalist Seek app
Seek to help identify with mushrooms.
Yes. Yes. And we weren't going to be trying any or anything like that, but it was fun to just try to capture them again and document them. And then Netflix, I don't know if it still has a documentary on fungi, but it did at the time. And so we watched quite a bit of that, which I don't think my kids would have been very interested in hadn't we had that recent experience of coming across a whole bunch of different ones. But yeah, I have tried to go. I remember just thinking that it was so cool how that happened and we all enjoyed ourselves so much. And I've been disappointed. It's actually happened once with the salmon too, Erin, where like last year we tried to get out to watch the salmon and we missed it somehow in our creek. I don't know how we missed it, but it is so fun. But you're right, Anne. Like you can't, for the most part anyway, you can't really plan those things. Like I'm sure if I had a plan for us to go out and define all the mushrooms and learn all about them, we wouldn't have, it just would not have worked that way. So I thought that was a good example of that. And the insight, like it will, you always find something, right? So you just go out and discover whatever.
The mushroom hike, it was also 2 years ago for us. We technically did it on purpose. Our state has a statewide citizen science program for kids where there's a season. There'll be like a field season and various, like you can earn badges. And so it had a mycology field season and you have to turn in 6 observations plus do certain challenges and whatnot. And so we went out the day and it was mind boggling. I mean, I don't think Seek identified a single species of mushroom, but we must have found 30 some. I mean, it was outrageous how many there were. And that was just like on our little dirt road. And we had the most fun. We never turned in a single photograph. Yeah. We never did a single challenge, but by golly, we had so much fun finding those mushrooms all day long. And that was kind of, that was us always trying to do those badges. He got very few badges, but we always had so much fun going out and looking, even if we didn't find whatever was in season, but we would just go out and look. And then when it came time to like coming home and doing the structured part, the bottom would fall out a bit. But like that mushroom hike, it was so memorable because they're amazing.
Yeah.
There's so many colors and types and shapes and sizes. They're just, it blows my mind. We got really interested in fungi for quite a while after that.
Oh, that's so cool.
They're pretty amazing. Like they're really weird when you think about it. Yeah. You really look at them, you're like, this is really weird. But maybe that's what makes it so fascinating, is it's just texturally and everything just really kind of odd. But yeah.
I recommend that documentary because I watched the whole thing and I
have looked for it. I know what you're talking about. I can't remember it, but I have looked for it.
I think it's just called Fungi.
I think there was like, what was it, like the hidden world of fungi? Because one had probably actually been showing in our state history museum or science museum, I think. And I was like, I wonder if this is going to become available, but I don't have like Netflix or anything like that. So I haven't been able to find it.
It's probably not on there anymore, but yeah, it is really fascinating. It's something you just don't maybe think too much about. And then when you have the opportunity to look into it, you go, oh, that's actually really cool. Which I think happens a lot with science.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then like the ghost flower, which Ashley, I don't remember if you saw it, where like earlier this year, I was telling Erin and April about those, and then probably because we thought about it harder this year than the other years we'd found it, that's when we got looking into it and then found out how they feed off of mushrooms. They do to mushrooms what mushrooms do to trees. It was just like, it was so interesting to dig in a little bit more and learn about them.
Oh my gosh, that, yeah. Ashley, I know what else I had been thinking when you were talking about, like if you were planning a lesson or you were giving a lesson plan to a class of kids. And I think you were talking about life cycle or something like that. And just like how different it is when I have found when we've done things through like a story or a show. I mean, I know we're talking a lot about the outdoors and we've done a lot of outdoor things, but I believe my kids may have learned just as much science from TV shows. We, mm-hmm. when they were young, they loved. So some of it was nature. Some of it, I mean, there was a lot of physics stuff too, which is always fun, you know, different, just the way that different things play out. But there are actually a lot of really good kid shows. But again, they're seeing it through the eyes of the character. So it's very similar to getting those really, I mean, you can always get really nice reference books, but also you can get them in the form of a story where, you know, they're identifying with the main character. There's a plot involved. Sometimes the illustrations are so beautiful. Like it just, I find that a really nice way to just, again, you might decide, oh, I want to introduce this, which is totally fine. Or it might just happen organically through books and TV. But yeah, I just wanted to put that in there. As much as we're talking about outdoors, if families aren't super outdoorsy or there's a particular child that's not outdoorsy, books and TV are, I think you can learn a ton. And I would actually say, I've said this before, when my daughter was little, she kind of liked nature. But I think there were a lot of, she wasn't really a kind of a rough and tumble. So I do think that a lot of it was kind of learning just kind of like through the beauty of stories and characters on TV. And she really did still develop a pretty strong interest, not only in outdoor nature, but other kinds of science as well. So I just wanted to throw that in there, that for people that aren't necessarily hitting a hiking trail every day, there's still a lot of, or even just stuff like, I was just even thinking small changes in our backyard. And one of the things that I've liked to do, I think I've talked about this, because my phone is loaded all the time. I will get rid of photos and then I'll end up with more. But what I like about taking so many pictures is that I like to be able to look back and have a look at the changes from year to year or month to month. And so like right now, for example, I can see that our blaze maple is at least a week behind where it was last year, as far as the color changes. And so maybe nobody cares about that. You know, my family might care or might not, but I think that's part of just kind of showing that curiosity. You know, I might just make mention of it. Maybe they're interested, maybe they're not, but just that way of kind of having that curious, it would be different for each of us, but just that curious way of looking at things. And for those kinds of things, you don't have to be driving to a hiking trail. You can just be keeping track of things in your own backyard. Or we haven't done a lot of this, but we did a couple of time lapses with pumpkins in the garden one year. And that was super fun, actually. To do stuff like that. So I just feel like there are a lot of little pieces too, that you don't necessarily need to be going super far afield.
Yeah, for sure.
We read books all the time. Mm-hmm. That's huge for us, is like to read books, and most of our birding's in the backyard. We're sitting on the porch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Ashley.
No, I was just going to say, like when I'm at the library, I make a point of grabbing, I mean, you can get science in fiction picture, children's picture books, but also like pulling from the nonfiction section as well. There's so many different things. And I'll just grab random things sometimes too, to strew, because you never know what might spark their interest. And having the Magic School Bus, well, the show, the Magic School Bus, we were gifted a lot of books from a friend when the kids were really young. And I mean, that's just a great one to think about too, right? Because the Magic School Bus takes the kids out of school and, you know, puts them right into the environment that they're studying or learning about. And then I will just quickly mention podcasts as well, because I know there's multiple ones, but Wow in the World is one podcast that just easily inserted science into our days, into our car rides. We would often put on, we haven't listened to it recently, but Wow in the World is always like, and it's really funny and it's for the kids, but I would enjoy listening to it as well. And it's kind of like what you were saying, Erin, about how like when you watch a TV show, it's, or you know, listen to a story and there's just science in it. It's, there's those podcasts as well that offer that. So just another way to bring science into your day. And it's not like we would just listen to it, right? And then maybe we would talk about it or it would come up later, but I wouldn't, we wouldn't carry on into a lesson or anything like that afterwards. You could, it was just no, not what we did. But anyway, sorry, April, you go ahead.
No, no, I was going to say a few things that have been really helpful to us. One thing I think that actually really started this sort of scientific journey for my daughter was she loved watching Dinosaur Train when she was, I don't know, probably one or two. She started watching that one, and there's a little character in there. I can't remember what his name is now, but he's always talking about having a hypothesis.
Buddy.
What's that?
Buddy.
Buddy, yes. So she just like took that on. She was like the little 2-year-old walking around saying, I have a hypothesis. I have a hypothesis. And that was just, she just loved that. And from that show, she also, have you all seen or heard of the YouTube channel called Science Max?
Yes.
I've heard of it. I haven't.
Oh, watched. I love it. It's a guy, he is from Toronto, but it's called Science Max Experiments at Large. So he takes like a regular old little, you know, science experiment that you might do in the classroom or do at your kitchen table, and he maxes it out. So he gets like the biggest space and the biggest materials and some kind of expert from that field of science, and they just blow out this experiment. And my kids both just love that. So I find like a lot of the science stuff that happens around here, it's really directed by them, but it's inspired normally by what they see on some of these cartoons or YouTube videos. And then it's like they watch that stuff in the morning or they'll see it at some point, and then it triggers some other idea later in the day, often, you know, at 9 o'clock at night when somebody's got like a balloon and they put something on the inside of it and they're waiting to see what happens, or they're doing shadow puppets or magic tricks or launching something off the top of the stairs or trying to make something fly. But it's all, I feel like it all, a lot of it comes from this inspiration that they see on the things that they watch, as you said, Erin. And then I can also relate to what you were saying about, you know, not always getting out to the nature trail. The funny thing about my kids is that once they're in nature, they love it. But if I say, who wants to go for a hike? Nah. It's always, oh, I don't, there's bugs and they hate the fire ants and the mosquitoes, and there's always this like mental block around it, I find. But once we get out there, they love it. And one of the things that we have been doing that's been really fun, and you know, sometimes it happens more regularly than others, but if we just go on a neighborhood walk, you know, it's really just about noticing, right? Like you voicing your observations or your curiosities or what you notice, and then saying to them, like, so what do you notice? Like, can you notice some, do you notice anything that you didn't notice before? And it becomes this game of like, who can notice, you know, the thing that nobody else saw, or what wasn't there last time, or there's this trail of ants that we've been watching for a few weeks, like thousands of ants that are carrying these little white things that look like eggs. And every time we pass the spot, we, you know, bend down there to see what's going on with the ants or what's happening up in the trees. And I was going to mention as well this little book that I found a long time ago. It's called The Art of Noticing by Rob Walker. And there's just like a whole bunch of little kind of ideas and activities that, you know, you can do just as adults or with kids, just to help you kind of notice things in different ways in different environments and keep it really fun and interesting. We've just tried a few of them, but that is something that I for sure would go back to.
Mm-hmm. I would toss back to the idea of shows and stuff. Is it with books? I'm man of the new section at the library. I love my new nonfiction. So I'm forever grabbing it and we'll pick stuff up and read various things. And But Why is another podcast that we like. But I would also say, like, people should never underestimate kids in that. Like, he likes his PBS kids shows and all that, However, he also is playing loves and has since he was, I think, about four, Nature and Nova, which are not in any way geared toward kids, but he loves them. And he would be the one actively asking if we can watch him and do them. And then like anybody watching me post for long on Instagram will see that my bookshelf is pretty much all science and nature. I don't seem to know how to read other books. And so at night, when he's trying to sleep, like I've read him his bedtime stories, but then I want to read and he loves it if I'll read to him. So like right now, when you're talking about the ants, we're doing Edward O. Wilson, was it Explorations in the Ant World or something like that, I think. And he'd be like, so how are the ants tonight, mama? And I'll start reading to him about that. So it doesn't really matter what the book is. And I don't necessarily know how much he gleans from everything, but it doesn't mean he's not interested and not willing to hear it. And so it doesn't always have to be kid level either. Like he's happy to have me read straight from what I'm reading to him.
Mm. Yeah. So, oh my gosh, you got so many thoughts. April. Okay. April, the piece about the kids shows and how, you know, so much of it sometimes comes from inspiration from those. I just want to second that because we often started our day with, well, often we started with like a couple of picture books. And when I say started our day, I mean like on the couch or in bed, like not now we're starting, like we just would have books and it just seemed like a nice way to ease into the day. So we would often start with a couple of stories and then usually we would have a fair bit of TV in the morning. And I've had this conversation with people before around screens or young kids with screens and TV and that kind of thing. And I've just said to people, I really feel like it depends on your family and how, what kind of the culture of your family, your particular kids, because for us, TV has always been quite interactive. And I don't mean that, sure, I definitely have put on movies and gotten dinner made. I don't mean that I haven't, but usually, just to move aside from science for a minute, like a lot of kids' TV also has a lot of music. So we would have like dance routines. Like there was a lot happening for us with children's TV. It wasn't just sort of this zone out space. But as far as the science stuff, absolutely. And I think too, for us, like dramatic play, we would have, you know, they would watch something, you know, you'd given the example of Dinosaur Train. Could be anything like that. And then later in the day, you would see variations of that coming out in dramatic play, and they would be setting up small worlds and all kinds of things. But definitely when it came to like physics stuff and chemistry stuff, yeah, they would be so inspired by, I don't know, some character catapulting off something. And so then they want to try to set that up later, or they're building something with blocks. And all of that stuff incorporates science, right? When you're building and you're balancing and you're trying to figure out just kind of like the physics of things. So I just wanted to say, I totally relate to that. I feel like kids' TV and picture books were like the most inspirational thing because they would identify with characters and then they would want to emulate, you know, the different things that people were doing. But I also wanted to say, you had mentioned in the last episode, I think it was Dude Perfect.
I was just about to say, Erin, you know, we're going to have to talk about Dude Perfect.
And so I have one kid in particular who, like, he and I still get a huge kick out of Dude Perfect, but he loves anything like that. He used to watch, it was called Crazy Russian Hacker. And it was like, yeah. Do you guys know of that?
Very familiar.
Your
child and yes. My children, yes, they speak the same language.
So he would just be watching all the explosions, watching all the, and things like Mythbusters, stuff like that, to just, I don't know, because there's that whole kind of like chemistry physics end of things beyond a lot of the sort of nature biology that we've been talking about. I feel like, those shows are so inspirational to be trying to test things out. Mm-hmm. And I am curious, like, I'm glad that I have had some self-awareness. You know, I'm not the most hands-on risk-taking person. I'm not like averse to mess and risk, but it's not my number. It's not where I go. You know, I'm not one of those people that has all the crafty, explosive stuff out and just, so I'm glad that I was able to follow their lead on those things. And just because, you know, you were talking about your daughter, April, and the lizard, and even just animals in general, like saying, oh, creatures love me or animals love me. And it just makes me think about how much she's exploring and learning based on her confidence. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've seen with my kids too, but I do think I held them back a little bit. So I'm glad I've been aware of it enough to still kind of let them do their thing. Because I have to say, like, two of my guys with skateboarding, they have learned so much. And I mean, you think about just the balances and the different obstacles and props, like there's that, but they have worked a lot with like friction, candles, wax, mechanics. They've taken apart skateboards. They've combined their skateboard with somebody else. They're always working with, not so much anymore. I feel like they don't have a lot of time anymore, but in their teen years, a lot of mechanics with different parts of the skateboard, a lot of waxing, and then experimenting between different types of candles. It's just stuff I could never, it would never even occur to me. And I do think there's other things in my kids' lives. I think my husband has introduced a lot as far as technology. I just wouldn't have thought about those things. So I do think that we've brought things in as well, but I do love watching what we follow their lead on as well. I don't know, just that interplay between like what they're inspired by and what we maybe bring in sometimes is interesting. And Ashley, I was kind of curious about like forest school, because I know for you, it's more of a co-op rather than like a traditional, and just like how much of the time you feel is stuff that's adult led versus stuff that they explore, or is it like a balance kind of the two?
Yeah, I would say it's a balance, but it definitely leads more to the children having the freedom to explore and venture off to do what they want. And then the adults are kind of around to just be around and support as needed. And of course, no surprise to you guys, they don't really need, I mean, they definitely need us there, but they're pretty good on their own. So just today, actually what you were saying, Erin, I think if I was understanding what you're saying anyway, correctly, with like, because I think you even said like being good or not good with like messes or like risk, right? And so today, and this is common for all the kids, a little less so mine, because my kids are, I would say, not big on getting dirty, probably because they're not big on having to wash up. But my youngest decided, just said like, can I get in, there's like a little stream or like a little creek that's really little, that of course they love to play in. And, you know, climbing over it, making bridges and swinging across on ropes and stuff. But my youngest said today, can I get in? And I'm like, yeah, of course you can. Like, we've been coming for over a year, and I guess he's never gone in, but he sees the other kids do it. And he picked a white shirt today. And a big part of me, I was just like biting my tongue, because I'm like, there's a huge part of me that's like, yes, go in. I'm so happy that you're wanting to do that. And this is what we come here for. And then there is another part of me that's like, and I said it, I was like, might not get too much mud on your shirt. Cause I mean, what does it matter? I don't know, but that's just a part of me. But I was like, not, that wasn't so much, you know, the risk, safe. There wasn't really a safety risk. But just, I was like, oh, the mess. It was fine. I mean, it's why we go. So that happened today. And then the other thing that happened today was we often will have, a campfire. And actually, Erin, when you were saying earlier how you've never been, like really comfortable, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but like really comfortable around fire and like burning, I relate completely to that. And I've shared that with some of the other parents that are at, our forest school, because there's one mom that usually will get like the fire started and stuff. And I've just said, that is not my area or my comfort. And so my kids haven't had much exposure to fire, and my oldest is interested in it, as some kids just naturally seem to be drawn to fire. And today, they were able to interact with the fire, and it was actually the other person who was able to just kind of do some like general fire safety stuff. And but the exploration was still able to happen in a safe way. And you know, there was a few of the kids, they were like gathering different things and like figuring out like what's okay to add to the fire, what creates more smoke and stuff. And we weren't getting into a lot of conversation about it, but it was just like them trying different things and having the opportunity to play with fire, I guess, in a safe way. But the other thing, like last week we were there and they were catching quite a few, I don't know if they would have been all toads, but like just different critters and frogs. And they would come and they had like the nets so they could, I don't know if they really caught much with the nets or if they would catch them with their hands and then place them in the nets to carry them around. And we were trying to like identify what, you know, specific frog it was. And then I'm sure some of them were doing that today as well, but it just seemed to be more of a bigger interest the week before. And then someone had brought like one of those, I don't know if you've seen like those containers where it's like, they have like it's kind of like the binoculars or whatever attached to it. I don't know if that's what they would be, but so you can take a closer look at whatever it is you've put in the container. So yeah, really, we come together so that the kids have an opportunity to get together and we can all just get together and learn and play and do things. And so whatever they get into that week is what they get into. And fort building, there's a mud kitchen, so lots of experimenting there with like mixing anything they can get their hands on. And it is just another, because like what you were saying, April, but like sometimes like let's go out for a hike and the kids are like, oh, I don't want to go out for a hike, but you know, like once they get out there, they're going to have a good time. That's what I feel like our Tuesdays are now. Not that they'll never complain about transitioning from whatever they're doing to go to forest school, but for the most part, you know, they're excited to go see their friends now that we've been going long enough. And there is an inside space there too. So actually for a good part of the start of forest school today, like maybe even the first half, most of the kids were inside. And as the parents were kind of like, oh, come on guys, like let's get outside, like we're here to be outside, right? Because we feel that like it's good to be outside. But they were having a blast making forts and doing teamwork and doing a whole bunch of stuff inside. They were wheeling different things around, like definitely science was happening inside as well. And then of course they were exploring lots outside afterwards in lots of different ways. So did that answer your question, Erin?
Okay. Yeah. No, it did, because I think when people think forest school, maybe they think that it's outdoors, but there's like a, you know, a plan or an agenda. And I just was kind of been interested in the way that you've talked about it. And I know Haley's talked about their forest school in the past too. And it just sounded really, just more exploratory than school-ish, you know? So Yeah,
and I think it's changed. We've only been there for a year. So I think at one point they did operate more as like a private forest school that I gather was a little bit more structured, knowing the people, like probably still pretty open and very child-led. And now it's just with it being more of a co-op and not one person or like, you know, a small group of people taking on the responsibility of, you know, planning the mm-hmm. forest school days. It's very much more, they still call it a forest school, but I would say it's much more of like a nature co-op. And it's just, but if someone wanted to bring something in and offer it, which we do sometimes, then that happens as well. But it's just, it's very open.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. No, that is very cool. Okay. I guess we've been talking quite a long time now, but we were just going to talk about, thinking about talking, like what do we think about higher scientific learning or gaps, or kind of, are there things that we think that our kids should know? Are there things that we think they should know in a more formal way or in a kind of deeper, more complex way? Or what do you think? Do you think that, I mean, I guess, you know, when we're talking about our kids' interests, we can definitely see how deeply they're going in those and that they actually are conversing with adults who are pretty passionate about those topics. So obviously they can learn things at a deep level. Do you think there's any concerned about the idea of gaps, or are there pieces that they're missing out on? April, you're totally shaking your head.
I want to throw something out there.
Absolutely not.
I read something. I want to toss at y'all sort of to that and then see what y'all think about it. Because I read this the other day at the river, actually, and it was making me think of this. It was from my other Edward O. Wilson book right now. It's Letters to a Young Scientist. So his second letter in here is kind of saying how he got where he was and offering advice to someone coming up in terms of becoming a scientist. Because he went from being a kid poking around Alabama, I think is where he was at, exploring ants. And then at 14, it was like during, I think he was 14, it was during World War II, the local camp was kind of having a dearth of male leaders. And so they asked him if he'd come lead the nature program, you know, and it just sort of kept going where he was so self-taught. And he says in there, like, my academic career was, he didn't exactly apply himself hard. And he does say, you know, I'm not condoning that, you know, you should apply yourself to your studies and all those sort of things. But his advice, he had this paragraph at the end of it that I loved, but one little bit this morning to share where he said, if I could like sum it up and make it simple, and I'll quote him on this so I don't misquote him. He says, put passion ahead of training and obey that passion as long as it lasts. Feed it with the knowledge that it needs to grow. So he had kind of said, like, get a basic understanding of science. And then if you find a passion, take it and run with it and go with it. And in the next chapter, he then talks about people in science who get scared off by the math. And he said, we have lost, because he went on from his very poor academic early days to Harvard, where he has now been for decades leading things. And he said he has watched these people who might be future scientists bow out because they're scared of the math. And he goes, why? Like, we need people who think different ways and who come at things in different directions, and that you don't have to know it all, and you don't have to be like the rigorous student who can do all the facts and figures. Like, we have people who can do that for you. We need the ideas, we need the enthusiasm, we need the curiosity. So feed that and go with that and take it as far as it will go. And so I think that's where I would go, is like, I think the whole idea, whether it's science or something else in learning, is that you get this foundation where, you know, you can do your basic math and you have this concept of how the world works. Like, I don't know how many times I have been taught or read about or tried to explain to my son how a tree makes food. I was with my old biology teacher who taught me this in college the other day, and I said, you know, once you get down to the cellular level and you can't touch it, it falls apart for me, and I don't think I still really grasp it. And so there's a lot of things like that, or maybe I haven't studied it hard, but if I wanted to, if I needed to, it's like, if you have a kid who's maybe getting older and knows I'm going into this field, then they will fill in the gaps, I feel. Whereas if you kind of cover, I think the most important thing for me with science is if you have a basic understanding of, like, okay, you know, the tree uses the sunlight and takes in carbon dioxide. If it's basic, I think, like with that quote about how kids are born scientists, I think where science starts to fall apart is when we make it grow up. And suddenly it is these charts and facts and figures and like these little arrows going through flow charts. And then it's boring, you know, where if they need it later on, if they kind of have a grasp of the basics of things, and then they know how to question and then how to start to find answers, and they find they still have that appreciation for learning and going about it, I don't think you'll have such a thing as gaps. Because if you try to stuff it in, like there was another video I'd look back on that I'd liked 2 years ago where Neil deGrasse Tyson says, kids are not these empty vessels that we need to pour information into, because that information is just going to flow back out. Whereas if you just create that like solid basis of general information. And then they still enjoy being curious and playing with something and going and find their answers. Like, I just feel that they'll get there. And I think for me, the most important gap to fill when it comes to science is, it's like the practical things. It's important to know the practical side of science, but also in this day and time, to have enough of an appreciation for the world. I think the big gap to fill is make sure they can be good stewards. So I think it's the importance of learning stewardship of the world. And that's the gap I've always tried to make sure we don't have here. The rest of it, if he's interested, so many things play together. I think he'll get there because he knows how to learn and he likes to learn. I think it is very important to create good stewards of the world.
Ooh, that was so good.
I don't have to add anything to that. That was just perfect.
Go, Anne.
I can't follow that up.
We're all just sitting there going, okay.
She is the science nerd, though. She is the science nerd. So it's good that we let her take the lead on that one. Yeah,
we're done now. Although, April, I do have to ask you, because you were shaking your head very, very, like, as soon as I mentioned the gap thing and, like, is this something to be concerned about? You were really shaking your head. And I just want to jog back to something I mentioned at the beginning, which was a recent reel you did. I think your daughter was building. And you said in the reel, like, this isn't something that, like, we didn't mention it. It just came up out of what she was doing and what she was fascinated by. And so I understand why you're feeling that confidence, because I feel like you are really doing this amazing job of capturing these, like, I don't know, learning in action. And just that one reel, there's so much going on there from, I don't even know what to say about it. I don't know if you've been add to it, but it really struck me just how fascinated she was and that she was narrating it to you. Because for some kids, so I can think of times like that when I've seen my kids building stuff, but not all kids narrate what they're doing. And it feels to me like she did that just naturally.
So I'm going to try and be succinct about this. I feel you saw me getting worked up on the screen here because I'm super passionate about this. I think because of my own experience with science, well, not just science, but with learning, and then being a teacher, and then being in this different role now. I guess what I saw with her, you know, if we want to just talk briefly about that, she just turned 6 the other day. I've not done a single science experiment with her, a single science lesson with her. That, what you saw was, she, like I said, she has this innate curiosity and passion for things related to science and building and art. She didn't even just watch that video. She had watched that particular one about building an archway a long time ago, she said. But she has learned now from watching a lot of YouTube videos, she knows how to present. She knows how to talk about step by step. And that is how now it's really fascinating to see that she not only will go in and build the thing, but then she wants to explain it all to me. And if I start filming it, she wants to explain it like it's being explained on the videos, right? But what is amazing to me was I watched her as a, you know, new 6-year-old. If she was going to school here in South Carolina, she would just be starting kindergarten. And basically what she is doing for me would be, you know, the presentation that would come at the end of a science unit or like a 5th grader or 4th grader, you know, whatever it is. It's like all the planning that I would have had to put in as a teacher, all the lessons that we would have taught, but then all the thinking about the group dynamics and getting the kids together and how am I going to assess this and now they've got to practice their presentation. It's like, she just did that. She did it all by herself, unprompted, in 5 minutes, and demonstrated the learning. And like, why are we so obsessed with assessing everything. Why do these kids have to keep proving what they're learning? Why do we feel like we have to teach them every little thing? Like you said, Anne, like they're empty vessels that we've got all this information and we're so smart and we have to pour it into them. And meanwhile, you know, I've been on the other side of this. I know you have, Ashley, as well. And it's like the teachers are stressed out. The teachers are not sure how to teach it or how to explain it or how to assess it because they don't feel like they're experts. They don't have all the answers. And the teachers are just as worried that, like, you know, that's what was so fascinating to me about Anne, the way you explain this. It's like when I was trying to teach science to the kids, it's like, well, what if they have questions and I don't have the answers? Like, we're going to do this cool science thing. And now I got 30 kids that are going to have all these questions. And A, I don't have time to answer them. And B, I don't know what the answers are. So we overthink everything and we ruin it for them.
Yeah.
By trying to teach it to them. Like, that to me is what's so backward about all of this, is it's like they, to me, the primary thing that we have to keep in mind when these kids are young and teaching anything, but in particular with science, unless we are like Anne and we're scientists, it's like, just don't ruin it for them.
Yeah.
Just don't ruin it for them. And that was my goal. Even as a teacher, I was like, I'm not the scientist. I am not the science teacher. I'm going to do my best. I just want these kids to get to the end of the year and not say I hate science. And to me, that is like when I'm in these discussion groups, so many of the homeschool discussion groups, and you hear about all the friction that's happening between the parents and the kids because the parents are trying to replicate school at home. It breaks my heart. It breaks my heart because I feel like the parents, their intentions are in the right place, but they are ruining their relationships with their kids, and they are just killing the joy of learning by trying to do things like they're being done at school. And it's just not necessary. It's just absolutely not necessary. And so I hope that for anybody that's listening, they can just see that it doesn't have to be this hard. It doesn't have to be hard. It doesn't have to be stressful and anxiety inducing for the parents or the kids. And so if we can just get through all these early years and find like ways to make learning joyful and meaningful, that's what the kids are going to remember. And you know, like you said, Anne, when they get older, if they're interested, when they're ready, they can learn all of this stuff. They're not going to become, you know, a scientist based on whatever they did or didn't learn when they were 5 years old or 7 years old or 10 years old. Like, this stuff doesn't matter. That level of detail doesn't matter. Just don't kill their joy of learning, and they're all going to be just fine.
Yeah, well, go ahead, Erin.
No, go ahead, Ashley.
Well, I was just going to say, I agree with everything Anne and April have said, and I feel the same, April. Like, when you see the parents and the kids stressing, that's the word I use, is like, it's just not necessary. It's unnecessary. It is unnecessary. And once you see that, it is heartbreaking. And I always think too, you know, another way of looking at it is we all have our gaps, right? Because there's no way everything, you know, if you go to school, or even if you don't, like, you don't remember everything you've been exposed to or everything you learn, but you're going to take whatever it is you take, whatever's most meaningful or memorable to you, you're going to take that with you. And you really did say it so beautifully, but, I think by letting our kids, you know, just learn through their interests and their passions, and yes, we're hands-on, so they're getting, you know, the basics and we're there to support them. They're learning how to learn. So when they come up to something like a gap, if that's, you know, if that's what we want to call it, then they'll learn it. They'll Google it, or they'll, I mean, I'm constantly telling my kids, I'm not sure about that. Let's look that up. I don't know about that. Yeah, I think, in a way that there's going to be gaps, but, letting the kids just, like what you said, April, like letting them enjoy the process and trust that they will learn, what they need to learn. And it makes me also think about how, you know, talking about like unschooling in science, you know, I think it's a bit of an unschooling myth, right? That the parents are just hands off and the kids go off and they do all of these cool sciencey things and all this learning on their own, which that's, I mean, they do go do that sometimes, but we're very hands on. And by just being curious with them, being a scientist with them, just naturally in your day-to-day life, then, I mean, I would have loved that as a kid if my parents, or when my parents did take moments, because I think all parents have times where they do that with their kids. And then trusting that, I think it's a little bit more comfortable and easier when the kids are younger. And then as they get older, and Aaron, I was curious, like, if you found that with your kids, because my oldest is only 11, but there seems to be more of a discomfort with some homeschool parents once the kids get to, say, like high school age, for example. And I was wondering if you noticed that with any of your kids when it came to, like, you know, biology or chemistry, high school level, did that feel different? Because I'm just not, I don't think any of us, but you have had that experience yet.
Yeah. So we had a combination of experiences here, you know, among four different kids and their learning. So we did, so we had some formal, so we had a couple who did provincial science credits. We had a couple who did not. And then one who wanted to work through more of like a homeschool curriculum, one who wanted really nothing to do with any of the above. So definitely a wide range. And I think, is your question, did it feel daunting? Did science feel daunting at that age as kids got older?
I think, sure. And also, like, did you feel like there was some, were you, I guess, concerned, kind of going back to what you asked about the gaps, like, were there certain things once they got to high school level science in the science area that you thought, oh, we should really make sure that that's covered? I'm assuming not,
no.
But.
So, no, I think it's a good question. So I will say that I don't think they actually had gaps in science, to be honest with you. I think because of the conversation we're having around, oh my gosh, the books we read, the shows we watch, and I guess I'm thinking, so if you look at it from like a kind of a schooly perspective, in the first few years of school, I don't know. I'm sure there will be those who will argue with me, but I feel pretty strongly that there's really nothing up until, like, if you take kind of from kindergarten through to grade six, I really can't think of anything on our provincial curriculum that isn't covered. I'm going to go back to the TV shows. even if you don't, you know, if you don't invest in a microscope or you don't do those things, I really think it's okay. Honestly, the amount just between like, I mean, we haven't even touched on stuff like cooking and boiled water and going for a walk and noticing that last week you couldn't see your breath, but this week you can. And so then you start wondering about water molecules and changes of state and all of those things, right? And so I actually can't think of anything in those first several years of elementary school that actually needs to be taught formally, to be honest with you. And then I think when you get to the high school years, one of you, at least maybe two of you, have said, if you are really heading in a certain direction, you're going to specialize. I think you're already going to be driven and you probably already know a ton about that area of science, or B, you're going to be motivated to figure that out. So I'm in the same camp with all of you on this. I would not be worried about gaps. And it is kind of nice to be able to say that now that my kids are older. What I will say though, is that I can think with each of them of sort of a part of science that they really, I would say they excel in it and are quite passionate about it, but that the others don't necessarily. So, you know, my one son, had his telescope out the other night. And so he's very patient. He'll spend a lot of time thinking that through. He uses the Skyview app. So he's checking things out ahead of time. He's watching stuff. My other kids, you know, we all did the Skyview app. It's really only that son and my husband who really follow stuff. And we're like, hey, this would be a good night to get the telescope out. So it's like you can enjoy his knowledge and passion about it without feeling like everybody else has to do it. So, I mean, do they have gaps compared to one another? I guess they do, but they don't care because they're not, you know, it's not relevant to, they're interested to come out for a few minutes, but they don't have the same degree of interest. And so then probably not the same degree of knowledge. And I really appreciate what each of you said. And I think, and I can't remember exactly how you were wording it, but the idea of, you know, we kind of lose kids or we lose maybe people when it comes to science by, you were giving an example of math and some various things. And it comes back to me about the interconnectedness of everything. And then I think when there's not, oh, I know what it was. You'd mentioned stewardship. And so that's where that passion is for my daughter, for example, is really in that stewardship. And I can think with the different kids, there has to be heart to things, I think, not to get all willy-nilly and cheesy about things, but I feel it's connected to our heart, whether that's like a spiritual thing, whether it's an artistic piece, whether it's kind of like an ethical stewardship interest. Every time that I see there be a little bit something else that connects with the science itself, that's when it comes alive, right? So I think for my son that's interested in the sky gazing, for him, it's not just the science. It's like a sense of wonder. And it's like I can feel him, I don't know how to put it. He tends to be kind of like a philosophical, it's like he's mentally kind of imagining the limits of the universe kind of thing. It's not just about which planet is aligned with what. There's something there for him about just like the wonder of things. And I was thinking about this book you were talking about with the ants. I can't remember the title of it now, but for my oldest son, when he was really little, I can remember we were sitting outside and an ant went by carrying a piece of goldfish cracker, like a piece of cheese cracker. And we got into this whole conversation about that and about like what the ant was doing and the fact that this was huge to the ant. This was like maybe like an eighth of a goldfish cracker, but it was huge to the ant. And so it led us into this conversation about like perspective, basically. And he went through a really big stage after that where he would be creating like micro worlds. We didn't have toy animals that small, but he was pretending they were that small. And he got really, really into this idea that there were worlds happening, like whole societies happening that we were not aware of, right? So like the insect world, like imagine, mom, like the blades of grass are like a jungle to them. And trying to imagine like how huge our feet would be coming by. And it kind of just, it was a period of time where he just got really interested in the idea of like, I don't know, that we share our world with other creatures and we only ever have our own perspective. So I don't know. I just remember there being a lot of different stuff at that point where he was just fascinated by the idea of like how different people and creatures perceive things. So it's like he's learning about bugs, but it's connected to him developing a sense almost of like empathy or like we're not the only people in the world kind of thing. Or, well, we are. We're not the only creature. The whole other episode. We're not the only creatures in the world. So anyway, I know that's all kind of airy-fairy and whatever, but I really think that's a lot of it is like, what's our heart in it? It's not just about the mechanics of something or I even think about technology and like what my husband and daughter like to create. It's just, it's art. The technology is art and they have to understand the technology to do the art. So that was a lot. Sorry, but
you have to care. I agree.
Yeah.
You have to care. When I, for a while there, I was working on trying to make like some picture books that had a science basis, and in the back I had a part about being responsibly curious, because there's always that balance I feel when we're out like in nature exploring, where you don't care about what you don't get to touch and play with. Like, that's what's hard about the school science, is you don't get to basically put in your own hands and squish it around, you know? And if you can't do that, it's really hard to care. So a lot of times, like if it's like a nature thing or whatnot, you might be with a group where it's like at a museum too, you know, don't touch, don't touch. And it's like, that's great because it preserves this thing right here. But if you don't let a kid get their hands dirty, figuratively or literally, and care about it, it's not going to matter and it's not going to click. So the bigger picture may suffer. So I would say, like in that book where it's like, let your kid play in a stream, just have it be this section, you know, like explain that, go flip the rocks here and you're going to find all this cool stuff, but we can't do it through the whole creek. Because did you just realize how much stuff we just uncovered? And we, you know, like this is their home. And so you can build it past that. But if they don't flip that rock, they don't care because they never see it. They never know what's down there. They can read about it all day long. But so it's like, once you find those little worlds, it's making me think of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yes.
I
thought that too.
But like, that's where you suddenly go, oh, wow, they have, yes, that totally different perspective. And in fact, with Ants the other day, because I had started reading that book to him, there was a new picture book at the library about, I think it was a leafcutter ants. And then it became this whole conversation between what they were saying in that book and what we were reading in ours, where it became a conversation about society, because Edward O. Wilson, he was making the point that ants do society backwards to what we do, where we start to, we will put our youngest and finest and strongest and brightest out in the line of fire, basically, be it like a war zone or whatever. We dump the cream of our crop out where they have to work hard or they're in danger or whatever else. Ants are the opposite, where the younger that they are, they have the cushier job and they're in the safer place in the nest. And as they get older, they're considered more disposable and sent out to do the scary stuff. It's like, it can segue into so many things where then it matters. And you have to find the way where you can connect back to where it matters and it touches on something that's personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll just super quickly, Anne, I just want to say that piece about the creek is so interesting, like that balance between human exploration and, I guess, wildlife ethics, because I know we've had that conversation in our family with things like sand dunes. And so there's always, that also is another conversation that comes up a lot around like signs and guidelines when we're out and about, or, you know, safety is another one that we're talking about, you know, fire, Ashley, that balance between exploration and safety. So I just feel like too, it leads into so many other like potential conversations beyond just like the nuts and bolts of the particular thing. Okay, so this is really, really good. Does anybody else, is there anything anybody else wants to add?
I would just put on to that, with us, it also led to, it was always our first chance at independence and being really responsible. Like when we would go out, I used to say, like, if we got off track during the week and we were button heads, even when he was like little, like 3 or 4, you know, if we were kind of an off week, all it took was like getting out into nature where I could turn him loose in a different kind of way, where he could have a freedom and an independence. And he had to be responsible for certain things, like whatever he was going to bring along for the day. But he could have a radio and carry it and go down ahead of me or explore something while I went over here. And so that was a whole other element that we couldn't find somewhere else. And since science can be so messy, it's just like a way to have a free play. And again, not worry about result, you know, where it's just let me test and pull, where other things don't necessarily allow that. So for us, that was part of the real fun and the gift of it, was like that freedom and independence, and where he got to just sort of really drive his own show wherever he wanted to take it.
Okay, no, this is good. And before we go, can you quickly what is the migration app that you guys are following right now? This really cool thing that you've been describing where you're able to know huge numbers of birds that are migrating, right?
That one's a website. It's Birdcast. I don't remember the dot whatever, but okay. If you Google Birdcast, you get the country image, and then you can get, you can put in your county. So I think it's only within the states. It's through the Cornell lab. They do that, but it's phenomenal. We're down a little bit now. We've been 2 million or more for the last few nights, and right last night it was like 600 and something thousand, but it's just mind-boggling what's going on at night while we're sleeping.
That is wild. Yeah. April, anything, any other thoughts before we close up?
I think we have covered it all.
Okay.
I got a little one waiting in the wings.
Yeah.
But this was so much fun.
Okay. Thank you so much. Ashley,
thank you. Nope, just wanted to say thanks for everyone being here and for sharing. This was really good.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for having me on. It's been fun.
Sure has. So, Anne and April, we will link your handles in the notes, and really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Night, everybody.
Night.
Bye.
And this ends our conversation today. We hope you found it interesting and maybe helpful. If you'd like to connect further or see additional content, Haley can be found on the web and on Instagram at Taking a Kinder Path. I, Erin, can be found at Everlearning, and Ashley can be found on Instagram at Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves. We'd be very grateful if you'd share this conversation with anyone you think might appreciate it. Thank you for your time today.